Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Jennifer Kalt, Director of Humboldt Baykeeper. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Today, my guests are Pat Carr and Julie Neander with the City of Arcata. Pat is leading an upcoming class for Arcata's recreation program called Climate Conversations. Thanks so much for being on the Eco News Report today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Julie, tell us your title. I know what it used to be, but I don't know your new title.
I'm Deputy Director of Environmental Services for Community Services.
Okay. And so what does that entail? Let's break it down a little.
What that entails is our recreation programming. Also, all of our natural areas, parks, and our facilities. Still working on energy, solid waste, stormwater, habitat protection and restoration, and a little bit on water and wastewater as well.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like quite a job. So what we're going to talk about today is the city's work on climate change, adapting to sea level rise, and in particular, this upcoming class that you're leading, Pat, Climate Conversations. So tell us a little bit about the class.
Sure. So it's a program that's offered through the Arcata Recreation Division. Actually, I want to thank you and the city for the support in getting this rolling so we can move on with it. Climate Conversations is open to all. People don't have to be Arcata City residents, and it's free, available for no cost. And so what led to this is I was inspired a while back by a program called Carbon Conversations that was started some years ago in the United Kingdom. Those meetings have spread throughout the UK and Europe. And I read about the Carbon Conversations material and thought it would be great to have something like that here in the US and in the North Coast. I kind of revised the material and tailored it more for the needs in this area. The structure is it's a series of six meetings on Wednesday evenings from 7 to 8:30. The upcoming section will be starting on October 4th. And the main goal is really to help people to assess their greenhouse gas emissions, their greenhouse footprints, and make a plan on how to reduce those tailored to their personal circumstances. So we focus on home energy, transportation and travel, people's diets, and consumer purchases, and look at the options that are available to shrink those footprints, you know, for people to consider how those opportunities would fit into their lives.
So it's really about taking personal responsibility. And, you know, a lot of times people say, well, what can I do about climate change other than vote? Or drive less, you know, that's a pretty obvious one. But not everyone can do that because of the way our communities have developed. And really, a lot of things have been developed for people to drive everywhere. So this is really a way to think about the bigger picture and what individuals can do.
It's a lot of that. I think in the spring section, we found that people who were participating in the climate conversations, then several of them made some really great plans and proceeded, at least from the people who I've talked to who were in that program, proceeded in making some big changes. But also another big part of it is simply the discussion that develops. It's climate conversations for a reason. You know, talking with other people who share the same kind of concern can really help people move into action and also help with just problem solving and building the kind of motivation that's needed to do, you know, relatively challenging work. Because like you say, we tend to think of just the fairly easy things. Driving less is certainly an important one, and that in itself presents some challenges. Voting is important, obviously, but beyond that, it's pretty difficult for people to think about incorporating this into their lives. Yeah, talking with other people who have the same kind of concern really helps people to get creative in their thinking, you know, brainstorming options, and also hearing feedback from other people. And just simply hearing yourself speak often helps people get a different kind of perspective. It's amazing how that works.
Really? What do you mean by that?
I don't really know for sure, but my theory is that there's something in our brains that when we hear ourselves speak, it's different than when we simply have our thoughts. That there's something about hearing ourselves say the words that introduces some kind of critical dimension, and we begin thinking about what we're hearing in a different way. I mean, don't quote me on that. I don't know if that's actually the way it works, but it seems to be so often. And, you know, people don't often talk with each other about climate change because it's often kind of a bummer conversation for people. People like to talk about things that are relaxing and that are kind of upbeat. And so...
Oh, you're talking to an environmental advocate here, so... Yeah, it is. It is sometimes depressing, and you got to make sure that people can think about the positive as well. And with the change in the federal administration, there's been a lot of positives in the state level politics and as well as in the local politics, like in the city of Arcata, moving forward with so many different programs. So the classes start on October 4th.
Right.
And they're in the evening for 6 weeks, did you say?
That's right. October 4th through November 8th from 7 to 8:30 p.m.
At the Arcata Marsh Interpretive Center.
Yes.
And how many people can take the class?
Up to a dozen.
Uh-huh.
Would be fine.
And is it free?
It is free.
Well, that's really exciting to think, you know, instead of in this day and age, people do things like go online and try to look at their carbon footprint online, but actually getting together and talking about things rather than being isolated in our own little computer desks.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people are really like stuck alone with their fears of climate change, and they feel like they are only one person. Each of us are indeed only one, but that also doesn't stop us from voting, hopefully. It shouldn't stop us from voting. But it's important to have the awareness that this is kind of like voting for the climate. Taking action to take responsibility for your own greenhouse footprint is a form of voting for the climate. And when we think about some of the things that can afflict our youth or anybody coming after us on Earth, if you care at all about young people or children, then it seems like taking action to reduce the consequences of climate change automatically should make anybody coming after us have a greater chance of having a healthier and happier life.
Well, I think it's really helpful, too, to actually come together with other people. I think there's a lot of power in that when people get together and start to discuss and figure out, okay, what are we going to do about this problem? You're not alone with it anymore, and having that level of support can really make a difference and catalyze people to actually take action. It's hard to change our habits, I think, and it's a lot easier when we have support from each other to do that. So I think it's one of the best things about this class.
And one of the other things that makes it easier maybe for people to consider their greenhouse footprint and what they can do with it is that structure of kind of breaking down our footprint into those areas of home energy, transportation, consumer purchases, and diet. And part of that relates to that we all have really different lifestyles with different kinds of priorities. You know, so you might have a family member living on the East Coast who you need to visit several times a year, maybe an ill parent or a sibling who has a lot of needs and you want to support. So you might not have a lot of flexibility in that part of your greenhouse footprint. But you might be able to find other ways to cut down. You might be willing to change your diet to be less meat intensive, which can help reduce your footprint in a number of ways. Or if you really like meat, you could invest in home energy efficiency. You could get one of those energy audits that the Redwood Coast Energy Authority provides to people. And then that could guide you in terms of ways to boost your home's energy efficiency. But for somebody who rents their home, they might not be able to invest in something like that. But on the other hand, they might be able to bike or take the bus to work. So, you know, kind of considering how the various options fit in with people's lifestyles can really help in getting started.
Yeah, there's a number of things I think people can do in Arcata. Certainly one of the most exciting and newest programs is through Redwood Coast Energy Authority. We have a community choice energy now, and you can actually opt up and have 100% renewable energy, non-greenhouse gas energy for all your electrical needs. And it's only 1 cent per kilowatt hour. So an average household, maybe $5 a month extra. So that's one thing. And once you do it, you know, you've done it, which is a great thing. It's not that huge of an effort, though. In talking to them, you can actually opt down again if you find it's just too expensive for yourself in the winter, maybe if you're electric heat. You could still opt up for times when you're not using as much energy.
So do you know where do people go to find out more about that? Because I've been getting some mailers about it, but I really would like to read more about about it. I actually haven't opted up yet, and I would like to, but I haven't figured out the details.
Well, Redwood Coast Energy has a website, and they also have a phone number, which is 269-1700. You can just go online and look for Redwood Coast Energy Authority, and I'm sure you'll find their website, and you can look at the CCE and get the information there, or just call them. I'm sure they'd be happy to help you. 269-1700. They also have energy efficiency audits that they'll do for residences and businesses, and they often have rebates that go along with those. So you'll get an audit that's free, and then if you decide to do some of the upgrades that they recommend, you can maybe get some money back for some of those upgrades with a rebate.
Yeah, I actually had one of those audits done for our house. I learned that they do one level of audits, a smaller scale, totally for free.
Right.
And then they do another, which is almost a full day spent in your house. It's pretty complicated. They do the work, and they look at a lot of things about your house. There is a fee for that, which is waived if you proceed with an energy retrofit.
Yeah, which is, it's a great service. For the most part, a lot of it's free, or it's definitely reduced cost, so it helps you achieve something that would cost you more if you did it on your own. So it's a great service.
I'm looking at their website now. It looks like it's not just for residences, but it's also for businesses.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's a really important way people can make a difference without really doing much except buying one less pint of beer a month or something.
Something like that. Yeah. Some other stuff that we're doing in Arcata is we have a zero waste action plan. So you talked about food and how changing your diet can help reduce greenhouse gases. And certainly looking at reducing food waste and really looking at how we purchase food, how we consume it can make a big difference too. So, you know, we're really working and starting an outreach campaign on that to help people in terms of being better shoppers. And then once you've got your food, really working to not waste it once you've got it. Right now, we don't have a facility where we can take leftover food waste and compost it locally. So that all gets hauled out of the area, which is, you know, a pretty big footprint again. There is backyard composting, and we offer backyard compost bins at a discount rate for folks that can do that. But not everybody has that ability if you live in an apartment or if you're eating out.
And so how important is composting your food waste for greenhouse gas emissions reductions, would you say?
It makes a difference. I mean, I think that every little bit matters. And certainly right now, our largest component of our waste stream is organics. We've done a lot to get rid of recyclables, and so paper, glass, plastic, those things that we used to dispose of a lot. Really, people are doing a pretty good job. We could always do better of diverting that for recycling. But, and so really what we're left with is this organic component, much of which is either green waste, but we have a diversion program for that. So then it really comes back down to food waste. So from the standpoint of the footprint from the waste we generate, food waste is probably the highest footprint.
Interesting.
And methane
is a more potent
pollutant from green waste and organic matter that's thrown out is thought to now be responsible for about a quarter of current greenhouse warming.
Wow. It's a much more potent or long-term.
Yeah, shorter term.
Shorter term, but more
much
potent.
Much more potent in the short term.
Yeah.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host, Jennifer Cult with Humboldt Baykeeper, and I'm speaking with Pat Carr and Julie Neander from the city of Arcata about an upcoming class on how to reduce your climate footprint. It's called Climate Conversations, and then also some programs of the cities to address not just reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but also we're going to talk about adapting to climate change, specifically sea level rise.
Yeah, I can jump into that a little bit. We are looking at changing our coastal land use policies, and part of them have to really look at sea level rise and look at how we're going to adapt, because I think it's pretty understood at this point that we are having sea level rise, and it's just a matter of how much and how soon. So there are a number of things going on in October. It's Sea Level Rise Awareness Month, and our community development department's got some stuff going on. There is going to be a guided walk at 1 p.m. on October 7th at the Marsh to really look at a high tide then and really talk more about how some of those areas in that part of Arcata are probably our most vulnerable to sea level rise.
And then after that field walk, there's going to be a meeting. Is that right?
Yes.
At 2:30 at the Marsh Amphitheater.
Yes, to really answer questions, provide a little bit more information on the different policies that we're looking at and how we're looking at how to adapt and change those policies as we go forward into the future.
Yeah, so this is, you know, this is really important because the Humboldt Bay area is experiencing twice the rate of sea level rise as the rest of California because the ground underneath the bay is actually actually sinking because of the tectonic activity of all the plates that come together here off our coast. The ground is sinking at the same rate sea level's rising. So we have effectively twice the rate of relative sea level rise here. And we have a lot of low-lying areas that are protected by dikes that were not engineered and were built in the 19th century when sea level was 18 inches lower than it is today. So, you know, this is a really important discussion. It can't really be left to private property owners along the bay shore. You know, we really need our local municipalities, the city of Arcata, Eureka, and Humboldt County in particular, to lead the way and trying to adapt, because even though it is really critical to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, even if we, you know, somehow cut our emissions to zero today, we'd still be experiencing sea level rise for quite some time based on the past 50 years or so of fossil fuels burning. Tell the listeners a little bit more about what the city of Arcata is doing to plan for the future with sea level rise.
Well, some of the things that we have already done is, with support from the state and the federal government, purchase some properties pretty close, you know, adjacent to Humboldt Bay. And so we're looking at those as areas where we could potentially allow for habitat migration as we get higher and higher levels in the bay. We're going to lose our salt marshes, and we're hoping that there's a certain amount of migration that can happen on the Baylands and also the McDaniel Slough area. We built in eco levees as well. When we put that project in, we looked at sea level rise and made sure that those levees were high enough to accommodate sea level rise. We also are looking at living shorelines. You know, when we're talking about sea level rise, we're talking about climate change and the hurricanes that have just happened. Part of what happens is more catastrophic, stronger storms. You've got higher sea level, and then you have a storm surge. So the damage that can happen there is pretty significant. And so if you've got higher elevation land in an area, it actually can slow that storm surge or kind of, you know, create more drag, and you'll have less damage, say, to your actual infrastructure. And so we're looking at whether or not we can create some quote-unquote living shorelines by creating situations where the bay and natural sedimentation can actually create more salt marsh in a way that would keep up with sea level rise. And we're really in the preliminary design looking at that. We have to work with permitting agencies to get that done, but that's one thing we're looking at. And then we're also looking at, okay, what do we need to do to protect some of our really important infrastructure, i.e. our wastewater treatment plant is down there on the bay. So what needs to happen there in terms of raising levees and that whole area? So that's part of what's coming up in terms of this draft sea level rise policies. And those should be online. If you go to City of Arcata Sea Level Rise, you should be able to find that page and look at those draft policies as well, because really that's what this Sea Level Rise Awareness Month in October, we're really trying to highlight some of the information there and get people more information on it as we move forward and ask the council to make decisions about that.
Yeah, I went to the last study session between the City Council and the Planning Commission on sea level rise policies for the local coastal plan that's in the process of being updated. And it was really interesting because one of the policies that was talked about was how to get landowners that have property that's very low-lying, instead of developing in these areas we know will be at risk in 30 or 50 years or maybe even sooner, how to give them basically extra development credits or how to transfer the development credits to somewhere else that's going to be more appropriate because it's higher up and not as at risk. It's a really interesting and difficult conversation, but, you know, what we've seen happen in Houston and in Florida just in the last few weeks is really a wake-up call, and Hurricane Sandy was a wake-up call, and then, you know, usually we talk about it for a few months and then we forget, but how many billions of dollars should the taxpayers of the United States spend to keep rebuilding areas that are so prone to flooding and coastal storm surges and high tides? I mean, it's beginning to be pretty apparent that we need to do something and not just kick the can down the road. So the City of Arcata is starting those kind of what are going to be difficult conversations and decisions that need to be made. It's really interesting. People should keep an eye on that.
And I think with these natural disasters and obvious symptoms of climate change occurring, regional increase in forest fires and the Great Pacific Blob that occurred a couple of years ago.
The warm warm water.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really reducing the productivity of those aquatic ecosystems. More and more people are really linking that together in terms of climate change and being much more concerned. It's been very impressive to see how pollsters find that growing majorities of Americans, particularly Californians, but Americans generally, see climate change as a serious threat to either themselves or their families or loved ones, and see it as a human-caused problem. So the program like Climate Conversations that I'm doing does not exist to convince climate skeptics, but there are a lot fewer of them around. And so many of us who are concerned about climate change are simply seeking ways that we can begin to reduce climate change in our own lives as well as systemically through the country.
I was just reading in the news that the Trump administration is now looking at ways to not withdraw from the Paris Accord. So that's pretty interesting. Maybe Hurricane Harvey and Irma and Hurricane Jose, and now there's Maria. You know, maybe this has been a little bit of a wake-up call, or I don't know. It's hard to know, but it's encouraging that people are starting to really think about the bigger picture. Like the state of California, the legislators just passed a package of bills that will streamline affordable housing development in cities that are not meeting their affordable housing goals, which basically means that there's going to be less leverage for people who are of the not in my backyard camp, that, you know, they don't want to see this sort of high density transit oriented development, because the state of California is having such a hard time, not only, you know, with the expense of housing, but what that means is we're not meeting our greenhouse gas targets because people in places like the Bay Area have to drive further and further away to their jobs. And the town that I grew up in the Bay Area has a downtown right next to the train station. It's dominated by automobile dealerships that have been abandoned for decades. Developer after developer proposes a high-density transit-oriented development to get more young people into the downtown, to get people who are going to be taking the train to San Francisco or Silicon Valley. And they just keep on fizzling because people don't want tall buildings in Menlo Park, or they don't want more people, or they don't want more traffic. It's really kind of heartbreaking to see such a huge part of the downtown. It's just these expanses of fenced off asphalt, you know, and you know there's probably some contamination there that needs to be cleaned up because they were auto dealerships. It's literally been at least 20 years, if not 30 years, that those auto dealers all moved to the freeway. It's really interesting, but these new bills in the legislature, if the governor signs them, will be interesting to see if that actually can reduce some of the cost of housing and get people to be living where they work again.
Well, that would be great. And the impact of land use changes on climate change is pretty significant. Yeah. Also, as we pave over land, as we fell forests, turn wetlands into filled in areas that can be built up, that reduces some of the natural carbon sinks that exist. And actually, I just want to toss in a little interesting online article that I read last week. It's from the New York Times online version. They have an article titled, "You Fix It, Staying Within the World's Carbon Budget." You can still get on it. It's still on there, and you can kind of pretend that you're controlling the world's carbon economy and carbon budget and play around with the figures. But what it basically shows is that to stay below 2 degrees of total warming, which the Paris Accords said would be kind of the fallback goal, 1.5 degrees being preferable, that all nations would need to drastically reduce their fossil fuel use by around mid-century. But not only that, also restore those natural carbon sinks, many of which have been degraded, like forests, and use carbon sequestration technology on existing fossil fuel use. And of course, carbon sequestration has not been yet applied in any large scale, so we don't really even know if it would work in things like coal-fired power plants. So there's not very much in the way of sort of slacking for us to be able to do if we're going to meet even that potentially dangerous goal of 2 degrees. We've already had 1 degree Celsius of warming, roughly that, I think it was 0.95 last year, and we're seeing seeing a lot of problems.
Yeah, I just listened to a pretty interesting talk, and he had done kind of the carbon budget for the planet in terms of our energy consumption and the greenhouse gases that we generate because of that. And then he had looked at what we need to do in order to kind of keep that, you know, within check. He really talked about how every decision we make, we have to make the right decision. So if you're going to buy a new car, it better be electric. If you're going to buy a new refrigerator, you want to buy the most energy efficient one you can. And just really every choice we make, especially for infrastructure, is very critical. And you want to go for that most efficient, best choice you can make now. Don't wait. Do it now. And that was really interesting. It was also talking a lot about how you would think climate change is so huge, and yet there's so little movement on it. He made a comment that if someone wanted to put up a cell tower in the neighborhood, everybody would come out to the local community meeting and, you know, have their say. And yet for climate change, we're not coming out and saying, hey, what are we doing? And I think because in some way it's very remote from us until something happens where we think maybe it could be related to climate change. So, you know, the hurricanes, were they caused climate change? Well, it's hard to say, but certainly they're probably worse because sea level rise is higher. Storm intensity is greater than it was. So, yeah, maybe. And then, but even sometimes people still can say, oh, well, it's not really that. And so how we really work on, you know, making that decision, each of us individually, and then also working so that our local and our state governments and federal governments also, as well as all the other governments in the world, make the decision to say, well, we don't really know, but maybe we do really know. And even if we don't we want to make the right choice anyway? And the right choice is to use less and to be more conservative in how we use the resources that we've got, because we do all recognize that they're finite. So.
Well, and I think this Climate Conversations program is really important because people need to get more information to take action. You know, there's a lot of people who say, well, what can I do? I can't do anything. It's really not true. I mean, you can make educated decisions about your own life, and certainly being educated about elected officials and what decisions they make. You know, there's one thing great about our democracy is whoever shows up to public meetings really get to have a say in things. And, you know, do the elected officials always do what you want? Of course not. But if you don't shout to them, you know, I've had people say to me, well, I never call my county supervisor because I know he or she won't listen to what I say. And I always say, well, they certainly won't listen to you if you don't call them or email them. And you'd be surprised, you know, especially if you go to a public meeting and you've never been to one, the decision makers all lean forward and look at you intently because they're really wondering who you are and what you're going to say, as opposed to the usual suspects like me. They already know probably what I'm going to say. But you can have so much more of a voice in things if you actually just fire off an email, you know, to your elected official or go to a public meeting. And it doesn't mean you have to give up your whole life to go follow all these things. But if you just pick one issue and follow it and have a say, it can really make a big difference.
And I think that if we look for a positive aspect of the Trump administration's activities, we can see that it has certainly mobilized people to recognize that the federal government is not going to be the answer, is not going to be doing the kinds of changes that we need on climate change, making those kinds of changes, and that we need to be more active, more proactive ourselves, both in the kind of work that you're talking about, Jen, with lobbying officials, but also in taking responsibility for our own greenhouse emissions.
Is there any big topic that we missed? In the KHSU archives, I will post the links to the things that we've talked about so people don't have to try and write them down.
I do want to just make sure people know how to reach the Arcata Recreation Division so that they can sign up for the climate conversations. That all people need to do is call us at 707-822-7091.
Absolutely. And you'll get registered.
Okay. 707-822-7091.
You can also go online to our Recreation Department programming or come in person. And yes, there's many ways to register. Well, just to follow up on what choices do we really have now and what's the most effective thing we can do to slow climate change, reduce our greenhouse gases, and Saul Griffith gave a pretty interesting talk that I was able to listen to called Climate Change Recalculated. And he really talked about how we have to make the right decisions every time for every piece of infrastructure that we ourselves are personally going to purchase. And certainly we need to be looking at that from a land use standpoint as well. He uses the city of San Francisco as an example because he's trying to design a zero net energy house for himself and his family, and one that uses solar, but recognizing that it's more expensive and harder to figure out how to store that energy and have that ready for you when the solar isn't available, especially in the winter months. So it was really an interesting, I would highly recommend it to everyone, but we are looking too at our building codes and things like that. Are there things that we can do in the city to help improve energy efficiency? So even though we all want to go and get the greenest energy possible, certainly the less we consume to begin with, the better. So less water, because all the water that we use, we have to pump it. So we're using electricity to pump it. And the same thing is true for any of the energy that we're using in our homes and or if we are driving. But certainly in Arcata, we're trying to make Arcata very walkable and bikeable. We've got the new trail going in, which hopefully eventually will get people to Eureka so you can commute by bike if you'd like to. And we've put in a lot of different bike routes and bike-friendly routes, and we're just continuing to work on looking at those connections where it's easier for someone to walk from one neighborhood to maybe the closest shopping center instead of having to get into your car and drive. So we're really trying to look at that in terms of our physical infrastructure in the city as well. And also having mixed-use development downtown, so we've got people who are living above businesses and such, so you can just kind of come out of your home and you can maybe go shopping or go out for a cup of coffee or whatever to help, again, reduce the number of trips in Arcata that are motored by cars, but really kind of helping people look at how they can walk and bike and carpool.
Yeah, the Bay Trail and the new trails in Arcata are just fantastic. And they're not only a way to avoid driving places, but they're great places to teach kids how to ride a bike, you know, that's safe and away from cars. And every town needs that. So Arcata is one of the few places where it would be possible. And a lot of people do, in fact, live without cars. So it's really great that that's really a focus of the city's.
So, you know, I guess I work for Arcata, so I always, you know, I'm a little biased, but I always feel like we're the little city that could. And so I think we do a lot. And sometimes maybe you think, well, we're so little, what difference does it make? But sometimes it's just one new idea, and then that can flow outward to all these other places. So, you know, one person or one little community, we can make a difference. We can make a change the more we come together and try to work on that. And I think Climate Conversations is one really wonderful opportunity for people to do that. I think we really can be working towards that better future for all of us.
I agree. I think Arcata is doing a great job. And I also think that Humboldt as a county has tremendous capabilities in terms of doing what we can to reduce our greenhouse impacts. Schatz Energy Lab, being local here at Humboldt State, has done a lot of great research, some of it on contract to the Redwood Coast Energy Authority. And they found that simple energy efficiency, you know, just insulating buildings and sealing leaks where warm air escapes and sealing ducts if you have forced air furnaces, things like that, is the greatest single energy potential for Humboldt County.
Well, and really being able to just click a button on the website or make a phone call and change your energy source to 100% renewable is really one of the biggest things people can do, because, you know, if 500,000 people seal off leaks in their windows, I don't know if that even adds up to, you know, the amount of power a whole county can use if we don't switch to renewables. So that's a really big deal to change the infrastructure and the whole power delivery and generation system.
We should do both.
Yes, we should do both. Well, thanks so much for being on the EcoNews Report today. This has been the EcoNews Report. My name is Jennifer Kalt of Humboldt Baykeeper, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was speaking with Pat Carr and Julie Neander with the City of Arcata, talking about the city's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, address sea level rise, and the upcoming class called Climate Conversations, in which people will learn about and discuss with each other their carbon footprint and what they can do as individuals to reduce that carbon footprint. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the KHSU archives at khsu.org. And we're also now podcasting, so you can subscribe at iTunes. The EcoNews Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next week for the EcoNews Report.